So our reading this morning is from the poet Li Yang Li. From blossoms comes this brown paper bag of peaches. We bought from the joy at the bend in the road where we turned toward a sign painted peaches. From laden boughs, from hands, from fruit sweet fellowships in the bins, comes the nectar at the roadside, succulent. Peaches we devour, dusty skin and all, comes the familiar dust of summer, dust we eat. Oh, to take what we love inside, to carry within us an orchard, to eat not only the skin, but the shade, not only the sugar, but the days, to hold fruit in our hands, adore it, then bite into the round jubilance of peach. There are days we live as if death were nowhere in the background, from joy to joy to joy, from wing to wing, from blossom to blossom, to impossible blossom, to sweet, impossible blossom. So I have been in and out of congregational life here since mid-June. First, I was at General Assembly and Ministry Days, gatherings of UUs and UU ministers. I vacationed in the month of July, and in August I've been in and out, working with people, having meetings, preparing for the new year, and doing all that reading and studying that ministers should do from time to time. My summer has been so lovely, so sweet. In early July, I spent 2 weeks in Australia with my family, with my son who's living there now. And we spent days on the Gold Coast hiking these magnificent beaches and in the low hills near the coast, rainforests, thick, lush forests. And then we came home at night and we would play cards, as is our family tradition, where it got very vicious and very funny. And it was pure fun. One day, we got to go to the koala sanctuary, which was a zoo of Australian animals as well. And I got to pet kangaroos. And their faces and ears are so uncannily just like a deer's. And I got to see Tasmanian devils, which are these large marsupials who look like extremely large rodents. And they lope around as if they had improperly healed broken hips. They look kind of ludicrous. And they were so exceptionally ugly that they were absolutely adorable. And one of the best parts was there was a whole exhibit filled with one-year-old koalas. And they had just been weaned, and they were really clumsy. They would be holding on to these eucalyptus branches that they were trying to eat at the same times, and they would start, you know, falling and grabbing, and they couldn't quite do it all yet. Australian fauna really, in many ways, seem exceptionally improbable. Like, there's a mammal, the platypus, that lays eggs. But in the case of koalas, actually, they are improbable. Koalas eat eucalyptus leaves. There are 700 species of eucalyptus. And the koalas are very picky. They'll only eat 50 of them. And they'll only eat the very green tips of the leaves. And it turns out eucalyptus are just a terrible food. The first thing is, they're poisonous. So koalas have to pass on to their young this bacteria that they carry in their gut. They're not born with it. They actually have to give it to their children. And these bacteria break down the toxins so they can eat these poisonous leaves. And then it turns out that eucalyptus are really poor food. They're not very nutritious, and they have hardly any calories in them. So koalas don't have very much energy. They sleep for 18 to 20 hours a day. And they usually just stay in their one tree. They don't move very much. They're awfully like more sloth-like than sloths. So how koalas ever came to exist is a complete mystery to me. But I'm so glad they did. They are remarkably adorable. I just sat there for a long time and watched them just munch earnestly at their eucalyptus leaves. And I just couldn't stop smiling. Later in the summer back in Portland, my daughter and I devoured peaches. We bought them just soft to the touch at the farmer's market, and we picked them so ripe off the trees on Savi Island that when we placed them in the box, they bruised. And we ate them with juice squirting into our mouths and running down our chins and our arms. And when we could just pause from eating them, we would skin them and make peach cobbler. We would make big plates of peach cobbler, and we would eat it in two sittings, dessert and breakfast. And that was joy. And so was Mamma Mia, too. For those of you who don't know, Mamma Mia is a Broadway musical made into a movie, and it weaves ABBA songs into a plot. And it is pure magical fun. Ella and I are great Mamma Mia fans, and we'll just get in the mood. We are going to watch Mamma Mia. And so this summer, the sequel came out after 10 years, and we went the second day. And I have to tell you, in the conventional way of looking at movies, like, you know, plot, character development, it's really not a very good movie. It barely holds together, actually. It's kind of random, and half the time the songs don't even really match what's happening in the story. However, we saw it three times, and we loved every single minute. The Mamma Mia movies are all about the sweetness of love. Parents for children, children for parents, romantic love, the love between friends. And they are filled with music that just makes you want to sing and dance. Those movies are joy, even when they make you cry, which they sometimes do. So my summer has been so joy-filled and full of the sweetness of life. It has been so sweet. And so I just want you to take a moment and consider your summers. Consider a sweet moment, a joy moment in your summer. And if you are called to do so, you could share it with someone near you. If you're not called to do so, just keep that to yourself. I'm going to give you a moment. So then there was the not so sweet. The world written about in the news has been not so sweet. I went to a workshop at Ministry Days on what ministers should know about fascism back in June. And that workshop has colored my summer. I've decided that fascism is not that helpful of a word. It is a word that creates extreme anxiety and distress in people. And I've learned that experts even have a hard time defining exactly what it is. It's sort of like, if you see it, you'll know it. So is it happening now? Is it not happening now? It doesn't seem like such arguments are very useful. They're more academic than particularly practical. However, I found that there is use in reviewing the histories of democracies that have fallen into totalitarianism. So I've done so. And my summer has been filled with this sinking feeling in my stomach as I have watched the news. The continued dehumanization and villainization of immigrants and asylum seekers. The retirement of Justice Kennedy and the opening of the Supreme Court to a conservative justice who will likely rule on abortion rights, LGBTQ issues, the rights of corporations and the rights of labor and presidential power in ways that are likely to oppress ordinary people and give power to the elite. The president met with Russian's Putin and seem to side with Putin's version of Russian meddling in the last election, contradicting the findings of U.S. intelligence, creating once again a surreal world beyond truth. And then the president wanted a military parade. Now he's been implicated in a felony, and Congress seems uninterested in even investigating that possibility, giving the president more freedom to act without consequence. So my summer has also been stalked by an increasing dark anxiousness that my country is moving dangerously towards a future where people are oppressed more grievously than they are now, and that betrays all of my Unitarian Universalist values. So, take a moment again. Has there been anything this summer that has made your stomach sink or made you sad or distressed? Consider for a moment, and if you feel called to do so, share with someone near you. And I will ring the bell, which is a sign. So there is a TED Talk about joy. The speaker is a designer who found herself curious. About what kinds of objects bring us joy, and found there was some universal things: rainbows and bubbles. She then discovered that it is objects with vibrant colors, abundant patterns, and rounded edges that bring us joy pretty much consistently. Birthday confetti, bright colored rooms, balloons. Notice the scarf on our altar this morning, or my dress, or my stole. These kinds of patterns and colors consistently often bring people joy. She then, on her TED screen, showed pictures of office cubicles, all in straight lines, colored solid grays and beiges. Offices could be designed anyway, but work is supposed to be serious and not joyful in our culture, so we have created work environments that make us respond without happiness. In hospitals and nursing homes and government buildings and prisons, it's all the same. Straight lines, solid stretches of bland or dark colors, no joy. After watching her talk, I thought about our struggles against oppression and hate and tyranny. These are very serious undertakings. Being oppressed, being teased or bullied, being a victim, being dismissed, seen as an object, or seeing others treated in that way is genuinely awful. It stomps out our laughter, our pleasure, our appreciation, and our gratitude. And to battle them is serious work. And we take up the fight because we are unhappy or angry or our conscience hurts. And sometimes we don't want to take it up because it is such heavy work. Or we pick it up and we burn out. Justice is done, we believe, in the way of business and hospitals and government, straight lines, solid, dull color, with seriousness and resolve. In my rather brief study of the rise of totalitarian governments, I learned many things. I learned the importance of villainizing and dehumanizing a group, the takeover of the judiciary, military parades, the disappearance of truth and of trust, and the infallibility of the leader. I also learned that totalitarian governments feed on fear and hate and hopelessness. It does not really matter if your fear and hate are directed at the villainized group or the government. As long as it makes you suspicious, bitter, constantly angry, and a victim. Since negativity is the fuel of totalitarianism one essential way to resist is joy. Joy nourishes our souls. It reminds us that life is so sweet and amazing and exceptionally improbable, and each and every one of our birthrights. Joy connects us to the fundamental experience of being alive. Joy is a short-lived emotion, but in that moment of joy coming through you, it washes away hatred and fear. It opens our hearts, and we want joy for others too. Joy is the soil, the bubbling, rich, teeming soil of resistance. It is not an accident that J.K. Rowling, in her Harry Potter series, a story about the rise and fight against totalitarianism, fills the story with the joy of ordinary moments among friends. People of color teach the importance of joy for resistance. They have been in the struggle for a long, long time. They know the soil is joy. Recently, in that vein, one young African-American man started the hashtag Black Joy movement. He posts joyful pictures of Black people on Instagram and invite others to do the same, to counter all those stereotypes of the broken, angry Black people. And they are delightful photos of faces and bodies expressing the deep experience of being alive. Others remind us to dance and sing and laugh our way to freedom. Emma Goldman, the early 20th century anarchist, said, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution." Because really, if the revolution isn't the ability for people to dance and sing freely, what is the point? I was incredibly lucky to have so much joy this summer. And living with both that joy and that stalking anxiousness shifted me in some way. And I came back into my ordinary life clear that I needed to resist more strongly. So I became active this summer in the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice Let Our People Go campaign. And I have been showing up and doing as much of what they ask as I possibly can. 2 weeks ago, I was at a Let Our People Go action when six clergy were arrested for not moving from the ICE property when the director once again refused to see them. One was the UU minister, Rick Davis, the minister in Salem, and he's been one of my longtime mentors. The rest of us sang, listened to stories, laid our hands on those being arrested, and sang some more. It was beautiful, deeply spiritual, and joyful. Last Thursday, I fasted with Emerge members in solidarity with those detained in Sheridan and other places across our country. We came together in the evening just outside the ICE building and ate at tables covered with brightly colored cloths and bouquets of fresh flowers. We ate well, but particularly of tomatoes. There were small yellow orbs in mounds and bright red round slices of tomatoes dotted with green herbs. The meal felt like life and joy connected to the earth and each other and those who were suffering at the hands of our government and its choices. I experienced how joy is resistance, and resistance is joy. I learned that this resistance, this Let Our People Go movement, is working. The director of ICE did meet with the Emerge leaders that very morning. Some men have been released from Sheridan, and we're hoping that more will be in the coming weeks. The public conversation about the detainees is changing from one of political strategy to the moralness of how we treat other people. Those who've been dehumanized in our immigration and prison system are becoming human again. And that is foundational work to fighting the rise towards totalitarianism. Joy is resistance, and resistance is joy. So this is my prayer for you. May joy, the fountain of joy, bubble up in your spirits and your souls and your hearts, and may it open your senses to the improbable, miraculous creation that holds us all. May your joy nurture you, and may it nurture all of us. Now, we get to enter into chocolate and fruit communion, which is our opportunity to savor the sweetness of this life. And I would like to invite Rosie up, and in your orders of service, you should have a reading that's called From Walt Whitman. And so we're going to have, this is really hard for me. I'm a dyslexic, so left and right backwards kills me. But I think this is the left-hand side, and that's the right-hand side. So split right down the middle. You in the middle can just decide where you are. Rosie's going to lead the left hand, and I'm going to lead the right hand. So let us begin. All, I know nothing else but miracles.
Whether I walk the streets of Manhattan,
or my sight over the roofs of houses towards the sky,
or wade with naked feet along the beach just in the edge of the water,
or stand under trees in the woods,
or talk by day with anyone I love, or sleep in bed at night with anyone I love,
or sit at a dinner table with the rest,
or look at strangers opposite me riding in the car,
watch honeybees busy around the hive of a summer afternoon,
or animals feed in the fields,
or birds, or the wonderfulness of insects in the air,
or the exquisite, delicate, thin curve of the new moon in spring.
These, with the rest, one and all, are to me miracles,
the whole referring, yet each distinct and in its place.
To me, every hour of the light and dark is a miracle.
Every cubic inch of space is a miracle.
Every square yard of the surface of the earth is spread with miracles.
Every foot of the interior swarms with miracles.
So you are invited this morning, as you are willing and able, to come forward with this community and savor and celebrate chocolate and fruit, two of the sweet miracles that this life offers us. You will each be offered these morsels of sweetness because it is your birthright to treasure the sweetness of life. So I want you to begin by taking a deep breath and let it out slowly. Take another breath, deep in and out. To breathe is a joy. You are each so welcome here. You are absolutely welcome here. In this congregation, in this place, on this earth, you are welcome here. You are a miracle. You are made of atoms that have come from the stars. You are a child of the love of sun and earth and air and water. You are a miracle. A baby koala is improbable, and so are you. Completely unlikely, completely unique and wonderful. And I invite you to come forward now. I do not want you to hurry. You do not need to hurry. Just feel yourself on this earth that you belong to. Attend to the music. Hear the rustling of your fellow travelers, their footsteps, their breath. Hear your footsteps
and your breath, and you will be offered chocolate and fruit. Let the fruit rest on your tongue. Feel the round flesh of it. Bite down and taste the juices as they squirt into your mouth. Chew slowly, enjoying how sweetness releases with each and every bite. And afterwards, hold the chocolate on your tongue and let it melt, rich, heavy, sweet. Now, don't bite that chocolate. Just appreciate it as it dissolves in your mouth and slowly slides down your throat. So I'm going to ask you to come forward. We're going to start with the back row, so we're going to start with the very back row. We want you to come down this aisle, accept the sweetness of life, and then return down this one. When one row ends, the next one can get up and move forward. You are welcome to come forward now. Be awake to the life that is loving you and sing your prayer. Laugh your prayer, dance your prayer, run and weep and sweat your prayer, sleep your prayer, eat your prayer, paint, sculpt, hammer, and read your prayer, sweep, dig, rake, drive and hoe your prayer, garden and farm and build and clean your prayer, wash, iron, vacuum, sew, embroider, and pickle your prayer, breathe your prayer, be your prayer.